Hello, 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 everybody. This is Tiffany Carlson, and you are listening to No Free Rides, a disability podcast sponsored by EasyStand.com, the makers of the finest standing frames in the world. EasyStand.com, make sure to check them out. So, hey, everybody, today is September, 27th, 2012. So, this is our official September podcast. Thanks for tuning in. And today we're going to have a working chef on the show, and his name is Rob Hodge, and he's from Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and he was paralyzed in 2002, and he has a fascinating story. Basically, this guy's refused to say no to being a working chef, and despite a crazy accident that happened to him when he was 28, he went back into doing what he loves, and that's cooking. So he's going to join us in a few minutes here and tell us about his injury, how he decided to get back into cooking, and the person he met at rehab that enabled him to do so. It's very, very cool story. And he's also a father of a 10-year-old, and basically not letting his paralysis stop him at all. So really cool guy, so stay tuned for that. But first, you know, I want to talk about a couple things, like I usually do, and I haven't read books. Are you a book reader? Do you read books? Do you have a Nook or one of those little electronic book reader gadgets? I do not, and I've been thinking about getting one, and I think this is a good topic to talk about. And a lot of people with paralysis are loving the Nook for multiple reasons, because, you know, you don't have to lug books around. If you have paralyzed hands, it's a lot easier to hold a Nook. Et cetera. And I grew up loving to read. And after college, I got totally burnt out on it. And long story short, I kind of fell in love with reading all over again a few months ago. And it's been a boon to my brain. I'm writing better. I'm thinking quicker, more on my feet. Ha ha ha. And basically, it's been great. And I've been thinking, you know, maybe I should switch over to getting a Nook. But I just don't know. I really like feeling the pages, the ink, all of that. And I'm wondering, if you have a disability out there, what's your opinion on this? Even if a book is hard to hold, do you still insist on holding it just because you love it so much? That's kind of where I'm at right now. I don't want to not hold a book. I don't want to just get a Nook because it makes my life easier. I always loved holding a book and smelling the pages and getting the ink on my fingers even. And even though I can't really hold the book that well, and I usually hold it with my thumb and forefinger now, and that's it, I don't think I want to get a Nook. So what's your opinion on this? Let me know. Email me, tiffany@beautyability.com. So, and another thing, you guys, since it's been about a month since I've done a show here, there's always stuff that happens to me. You know, if you're paralyzed, you know, there's always crazy stuff that happens to you. Even if you go out to the grocery store, something interesting usually happens to you. And so that happened to me, actually. I always seem to have grocery store stories on this podcast. I don't know why. The other day, though, you know, I was at a local grocery store getting a few things to make guacamole. And an older lady was checking me out, and she saw, of course, me taking a few extra seconds to get my card out because, yeah, my hands are like in fists. I can't open them up. And she's like, "Oh, you're doing so good. Good for you. You're doing good. Don't worry about it." And I don't like that at all. What do you do when this happens to you? When this happened to me the other day, I gotta tell you, I wasn't in the best of moods. I bit my tongue because I didn't want to say the first thing that came to my mind. And then the second thing I decided to say was, "Really? I don't think I'm doing that good. My hands don't work at all. I'm just making it work for me." And that's what I said, verbatim. And she didn't say anything after that, you know, and I wasn't being rude. Do you think that was rude? I think I'm starting to feel more real in this life of mine. I want to be more real, and it's just, someone's being nice to me, it's not necessarily the right thing. I want to be real and say, "Yeah, looks like you're having a hard time over there, but at least you're managing, okay?" And you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, maybe that old lady, that's kind of what she meant to say. But of course, it came out the wrong way. And a lot of times people, I think, try to talk to us and say nice things to us, but then they come out the wrong way, or usually they do. And then, of course, we have no idea what they're really trying to tell us. And it's really frustrating. And then, of course, we all don't like these people. And I, the more and more, the longer and longer I live with this disability of mine, the less and less patience I'm beginning to have for people. It seems like, you definitely need to work on your patience, because you start feeling like everybody should be as experienced and knowledgeable as you, but they're not. So, you know, you have to be patient when you have a disability. It's so hard. But anyways, and also, you guys, another thing that happened to me before I bring on Rob, I want to talk about today, was, you know, going to parties. When you're invited to a house party, a friend's party, a candle party, a Tupperware party, a football party, and, you know, there's steps into the house, do you still go? And if so, how does that work out for you? You know, I've been a big proponent of going to inaccessible parties and just bringing my manual chair along and allowing myself to get lifted in and out for years. And I usually don't mind it. But lately, it's starting to not be that fun for me anymore. And I'm wondering if it's becoming a really kind of not a good idea after all. And I feel like I'm ruining everyone else's fun if they bring me along and I'm too needy, and I have my friends that bring me into these inaccessible parties and I need extra help doing A, B, and C. And I'm starting to feel like more of a, people have to help me more, and then I can't really enjoy myself. You know what I'm saying? What do you feel about this, going to inaccessible parties and having people help you? And even though they say they don't mind, don't you hate being in that situation and wanting to feel completely independent? I don't know. It's so hard for me. I feel so conflicted. Sometimes I really want to go to these parties and I don't want to be left out, but then at the same time, when I go, I'm not having fun. So what do you do? It's so difficult. Anyways, it's one of those things that you have to learn to live with when you have a disability. It's just being, you're going to be conflicted in a lot of situations. There's not really going to be a clear answer on what you should do. But you kind of have to weigh the pros and the cons. I'm not quite sure. You know, and speaking of weighing pros and cons, that's kind of what Rob Hodge is the master of, who our guest today. So, you know, do I go back into cooking or don't I? Is it going to be too difficult? So hold on for 1 second while we get Rob ready to go, and stay tuned for a fabulous interview, okay? Hey, everybody. As I mentioned at the top of the show, today we are joined by Robert Hodge. He is a working chef at Ambrosia Fine Dining and Nectar Lounge. It's an Italian restaurant in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And I actually wrote about Rob for a new mobility article almost a year ago. It came out this summer, or actually, no, sorry, I want to talk about it. It came out last March. And so I've kind of known about him for a while, but I've never had the opportunity to speak with him until right now. So without further ado, hey, Robert, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, sister?
Lovely, lovely. Now, should I call you Robert or Rob?
Rob is great.
Rob is good. Okay, I wasn't sure. I know some people are specific about their names, so I want to make sure I got it right. So, super nice to meet you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. So, and I know, like, I told everybody that you were injured about, I don't know, what, 2002 or so? When did your injury occur?
It was December of 2002.
All right, and it was a fall, correct?
Yes.
All right, well, can you tell us about what happened, and was it like, what exactly went down?
It was actually after a carjacking, where I was being carjacked by two assailants, and they hit me in the back of the head with the gun.
Oh my God.
And I got out the car to run, and one of them started shooting at me.
Oh my God.
And as I was running, the guy started to shoot again, and my only way to get away from him was to go over an embankment. Well, he actually helped push me, but I went over an embankment and I fell 65 to 70 feet.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and I broke my T12 vertebrae, my right hip.
Wow.
And my spleen burst, my lungs collapsed.
Oh my God, that is intense. Now, did that feel like the longest fall of your life or what?
I really don't remember it.
No?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of have like flashbacks to the impact,
mm-hmm.
but I really don't remember it.
That's, you know, that happens a lot with spinal cord injuries. They don't really remember. Do you remember waking up not being able to move?
Yeah, I remember waking up and just actually just losing my mind because I had wires and a neck brace on and family was around me. I just didn't know where I was.
Oh, so you didn't get conscious until you were at the hospital.
Right.
Oh, my God.
I guess they had taken out my spleen and everything.
Wow. It sounds like you were probably lucky to survive that fall, huh?
Yes. That was the first thing the doctor said to me when I woke up, was they could not believe that I was still there.
That's crazy. I mean, a lot of times when people have spinal cord injuries, you get so focused on, oh, man, it really sucks, I broke my back. But maybe in your situation, you can just be grateful you survived that, you know?
Yes, that was the main thing. And my son was only 3 months old at the time.
Oh, wow.
So
that must have been...
It was definitely a blessing to still be alive.
A lot, for sure. And I know that, you know, that was such a severe injury, so you must have been in the hospital for a while, huh?
Yes, I was in the hospital for 3 months.
Okay.
And, I wound up getting a staph infection when I was there.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, I had to stay in the hospital longer before I actually went to
rehab, right?
In a rehab.
Rehab. I know, right? And where did you go for rehab?
It was in Squirrel Hill in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
It's the name of it's changed since I've gone.
Okay.
It was in Squirrel Hill in Pittsburgh where I had the accident.
Did you feel like you had pretty good rehab after your injury? It's always fun to talk to people about that because, you know, some people are like, oh, I wish I had more rehab or...
I mean, I think they gave me all the tools, mm-hmm. you know, to get around at home. Mm-hmm. They inspired me.
Good.
It was just basically dealing with the pain and anything while I was there.
Oh, yeah.
And it was discouraging because, you know, when you first get hurt, you have to wear I had to wear a turtle shell type thing.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
And it was really hard to mm-hmm. go through rehab with wearing that, because I couldn't get out the bed without it being on.
Oh, I know. As for me, I had to wear a neck brace, but I've seen paras wear that turtle shell, and it looks really constricting. It looks awful. I know.
And to be inside, you know, before you get out the bed, you might have to put it on you, and then to sit in your wheelchair, that was like the most uncomfortable thing.
Oh, my God. Did you have any chronic pain with your spinal cord injury, or do you still?
Not as much. I had the titanium rod taken out about 4 years ago.
Really?
I was in my back.
That's...
I was giving me a lot of trouble, actually.
That's fascinating. I've never... You got injured in 2002 and you got your rods removed just 4 years ago, and they were really causing that much problems, huh?
Yeah, well, I fell. I, fell backwards in my chair one day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and, I wound up getting this huge contusion on the back of my back, and when I had my accident, I weighed like 190 pounds.
Okay, that's
I wound sick. Up like from all the pain and not being able to eat, I lost probably like 72 pounds.
Oh, not good.
And that rod, I mean, you can look at my back and see it bulging out of my back.
Oh my God, scary. Oh.
Yeah, so the surgeon, he called me back in, and I had to get the second surgery on my back.
Well, you know, so you've been living 10 years with the spinal cord injury, and, you know, your injury happened, and your family, man, it sounded like, when your injury happened, and a lot of people, you know, they have some serious depression, you know, after they get injured. What was it like for you? Did you kind of just try to get right back into your life, or were you like, where am I going to go next? Where was your head at?
That was the thing. I didn't know if I could ever cook again in the kitchen.
Right.
And then my son's mother, the most depressing thing, she couldn't take it.
Oh.
So like 3 weeks after I came home, she left.
Oh, my gosh. That happens so often. I hate hearing that, but it's common.
Yeah, and they kind of talked about it when I was in, you know, physical therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know, they told me that it may happen.
Yeah, what are they going to tell you? Your woman's going to leave you? Like, do you really? They're not going to outrightly tell you that, but it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of glad that the doctor told me that.
Yeah.
He said it's possible. He was giving me all the possible, you know, that could happen and everything.
Right. Which they should do. So, like,
he's a specialist in it. So, the doctor at the physical therapy, and he told me about, you know, the bad things that happen, and then he also talked about after the bad things happen, the positive things that come out of
it's
it.
Good.
And actually, it made me stronger more than anything.
Really? So, did that happen, like, what was, like, how many months or years did it take for you to get to that point? Like, because, you know, I knew you were into cooking school, obviously, way before you broke your back, and, like, how did you get to that point? I mean, for me, it took me, like, 3 years to get, like, okay, I can do this.
Right. It took about 2.5 years, because they wouldn't let me drive or anything, so I had, like, cabin fever.
Oh my gosh, really? Were they trying to, like, of course when you have an injury like yours, they want to, like, redo your whole driving assessment, right?
Right, I had to learn, go through driving school and everything again.
No. Yeah, you weren't about to use the public transportation, huh?
Yeah, well, I was using it, but it was so bad to where I would go to, they would take me to physical therapy, and then I would be sitting there, like, 2-3 hours for them to come pick me up again.
I know, it's ridiculous. Yeah. You can't live around that schedule, right?
It's horrible, and where I live at, I lived on a hill.
Okay, oh.
So it was, like, impossible for me to go off of it without, you know, assistance.
Oh, my God, that's awful. So what kind of car do you drive, or did you always stick with the car after you got injured?
Well, the continued place when I came up here to Johnstown, I was going through the Hermsey Andrews Center.
Okay.
And I told them about my problem, about not being able to get around and everything.
Mm-hmm.
They actually paid for me to get a power chair.
See, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I was able, you know, so when my son, he was just coming over on the weekends at that time.
Okay.
So when he came over, I mean, we could sit on my lap and we would ride to get, you know, sheets at the convenience store and get his milk and things like that. And he loved riding around. It was awesome.
Well, so you would use your power chair before you got your car and everything then, huh?
Yeah, I used my power chair for about maybe a year.
Yeah.
Before I got my car.
And then as a paraplegic, though, I'm sure nowadays you stick with your manual, of course, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's...
I stick with my manual.
So let's...
Strap the body and shit.
And now, I'm just fascinated, and I wrote about this in the New Mobility article, and you've been covered, you know, in a couple other magazines in your area, you know. A paraplegic chef, OMG, everyone thinks it's a big deal, and it kind of is. I mean,
didn't even see it like at that because, you know, when I was at home, all I wanted to do was cook, and, you know, I would take my time out in the kitchen and cook while my son sat on my lap, and I would watch the Food Channel.
Yeah.
And when I was in the physical therapy place, the head director of the place, his best friend, was opening up a restaurant here in Johnstown. It was called City View Bar and Grill.
Okay.
It actually overlooks the city.
Cool.
And
nice.
On top of the mountain. And I actually talked to him about it, you know, because I didn't want to go to school to learn anything else because food is my passion.
Right. It was food something you loved since you were a kid? Or?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be a chef.
That's adorable.
Yeah, so guy, he was like, I think it's because he's the head director of the physical therapy place I was going to.
Yeah.
He's a paraplegic as well.
Awesome.
So his best friend understood the situation. He said, I think it'd be awesome if he comes work in our, you know, in the kitchen for me, you know.
Yeah.
And he gave me a chance to come and make soups and things like that. And
yeah.
I hadn't cooked in a professional kitchen in about 2.5 years. So.
Oh, what did it feel like the first time you went to that kitchen in your wheelchair?
Oh, I felt like a kid in a candy store.
Oh, you weren't nervous?
No.
Oh, I would have been. I'm a baby. I would have been like, I'm going to totally screw this up.
Well, my main thing was how was I going to get around and how was I going to, get pans and look into the pots and all that stuff.
Yeah. Did you think, you know, I can do this, though? All I got to do is just redo it all, or?
Yeah, once I got in there, because when I was going through the physical therapy place, they even talked to, you know, they were willing to help me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was the OVR program where, you know, the occupational vocational place.
Cool, yeah.
And they help you at your job to whatever needs you had. And we looked at different tables that, like, had was raised up and down, mm-hmm. rise up and down.
Yep, yep.
You know, to fit me, you know. And then they talked about the stand-up chair.
Yep.
Things like that. So And when they told me all those things, I said, wow, I know I can really do
it. You know. And see, you have, that was such a great thing. When I was hurt way back in 1993, and it's great, because nowadays, people like yourself, you know, instantly you know everything that's available to you, so you know you can get out there and do it, right?
Right, and everything's on the computer and everything, you know, so it felt weird being out because I wasn't going out of the house as much.
I know, of course.
It felt good. That was like the best rehab, to be able to go and work in the kitchen again.
Well, what was it like dealing with the line cooks and everybody? I mean, were they like, oh, you're in a wheelchair, he's not going to be able to do it? Did you have to, like, prove yourself extra?
Right, I did have to prove myself, because it was to the point where, like, I was making more money.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the other cooks.
Yep.
They're like, this guy's in a wheelchair, he can't do this, and he can't, basically judge me, because they had to get a pot down for me and everything.
Right, right.
But I had in my mind, I was like, if you give me that pot, and what I put in it, I'm going to make sure it's the best thing that, you know, you ever could make. It was more of a, show myself, prove myself type of thing.
I know. Well, my boyfriend's a chef, so I kind of know a lot about your world now after 2 years of dating him. And he says it's kind of tough in the kitchen. Everyone's mean to each other, and that's the way it is, you know? You give each other a little bit of roughness. Is that how it is?
Right. Well, it was basically like people said jokes, but I always had a good, you know, my personality always had good comebacks.
Yeah.
So it was like I could joke about myself and then joke on them as well. So they couldn't even say anything back to me.
Yeah.
Because I already made fun of myself.
I know. And so do you have to, like, make wheelchair jokes then?
I didn't have to.
But you do?
If somebody did, I do make wheelchair jokes.
You should. I do too. I think there's a lot of power in that. Yeah, you need to. I mean, they're already thinking it.
I do it on Facebook, and I do it all the time.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me. And people are like, wow, this guy is, you know, it gives everybody a totally different perception of people in wheelchairs. They expect you to be down with your head in the sand.
And, I know, and hate, you know, the world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
but when they see, actually, when people loved it when I came around, because I brought a good, you know,
energy,
personality, and a good, you know, just good vibes to the kitchen.
Did you ever have to fire anyone as a chef that just didn't get you as someone in a wheelchair and they're just being rude to you? Like, sorry, you gotta go?
No, I never. Everybody that I've met so far,
good.
Once they cooked with me and everything, they always gave me good respect. You know,
awesome.
I never had any problems with people that were disrespectful or
good.
Said anything negative to me while working in the kitchen.
That's good. You know, you never know. I had to ask. But, you know, people out there listening, there who maybe are even involved in the kitchen world, there, what are some specific, like, accessibility features of the kitchen you work in?
My kitchen I'm working
yeah,
in?
Yeah, the one that you're working at Ambrosia. Like, what are some, like, very specific things you've done to make it work for you, like, that someone out there could maybe do it if they're going to be a chef in a restaurant? What has worked for you specifically? Like,
well, one good thing about it is that I worked in this town before I got hurt. So when this job became available, I talked to the owners and I talked to the GM at the time, and the place was just opening.
Oh, that's nice.
So the good thing about it was they wanted me to be the chef and to work in the kitchen, and they just gave me and the GM at the time full range to make the kitchen accessible for my wheelchair.
And have you tried to move everything as low as possible? Or, I mean, there's going to be some things, like you were saying, that you just can't put at your level, though.
Yeah, there's some things I can't put at my level, but I always have the attitude where I could do the same thing.
Yeah.
I'll just have to do it a different way. You know,
yeah.
I can always do things like when I have to get a pot off the top shelf, they laugh because I'll take a broom.
Yeah.
I'll just pick it up and I could toss it up in the air and catch it now. You know, like it's just second nature.
And I know too, you made like the front cook line was a bit wider, right? So you can navigate through the kitchen.
The entire kitchen is wide.
That's so cool.
We moved all the spices down to where my level, even the spice rack on the wall, is at my, right at my level, so I can get everything.
And I know you guys put ramps in the coolers, too, because usually those back coolers, you can't get in those either. I mean, you had to do all that.
There's rats on the back door, on the cooler, the freezer.
Yep.
Everywhere that I have to go, even for me to do my food orders and everything.
That's great.
All spaced out where I can see it and reach it. And the coolers, they have everything that I use. It's like my shelf. So they all put it right where I can get it. Or if I can't reach it, the other cooks are more than happy to get it for me.
And as a chef, too, you know, do you do a lot of actual cooking, or is a lot of your time spent with the ordering and all that?
No, I actually do all the banquet cooking.
Okay.
I design the menus. I write all the recipes.
That's great.
And everything like that.
So does your restaurant do a lot of catering?
Yes, we do catering at our facility, mm-hmm. and we do off-premise catering.
That's great. And so, and you do as much, obviously you do a lot of it too. I mean, you just do as much as you can, and you have your assistants help moving the stuff in and out of the vans and stuff, or?
Well, I don't have to do the labor work.
Okay.
If it's something small, you know, we have a food order, I can put on my lap and mm-hmm. I can go in the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
put it where I need, things like that. But usually the other guys take care of that. Even at our war memorial, like our convention center, here in Johnstown.
Yeah.
We cater parties for different celebrities that come in and do concerts and things like that. Like, we cater for Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Oh, awesome.
Raven McIntyre.
No way.
Yeah. So it was pretty cool to be able to.
You must absolutely love what you do. Do you ever think, oh, man, maybe I want to try something different in life, or is food it for you?
I think food is it for me. I mean, anything like towards the future is going to deal with food. I would like to have a small restaurant, you know, nothing big, just somewhere I sell mm-hmm. soup sandwiches, a couple entrees, and that's it.
Right.
Know?
Well, I remember when I interviewed you before.
Oh, good, good.
And your favorite foods to cook are soups, aren't they?
Soups, seafood, steaks. I'm mostly known around this area for my soup stocks and my sauces that I make.
Really?
And I come up with different marinades for our steaks, like that, the menu.
So you're a big fan of using the food processor?
Yeah, I love using all the kitchen equipment.
Whenever I watch Bobby Flay and he's making steak marinades, he always uses the food processor every time he uses it.
Yeah, I use a food processor, but if I'm making like a big marinade, I have this thing, I call it, it's a motorboat.
Oh, yeah?
This handheld device where it's like about 2.5 feet long with a blade on the end of it.
Nice.
And it's like a hand blender.
Oh.
The puree, 5 gallons of stock.
That's pretty slick for...
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Do you do a lot of stuff on your lap then?
I used to.
Yeah.
But when we opened this kitchen, we actually got a table.
Okay.
Where it's very comfortable for me to work on.
All right.
I don't have to put anything on my lap.
That's so cool.
Just when I'm like, if I'm putting celery and carrots and onions and stuff like that, something I'm going to cook, I'll be in the cooler and I'll have it on my lap inside of a bus bin or something. I'll throw it all in there and I'll just roll out the cooler.
That's cool. When you're at home, they have this thing that they sell to people in wheelchair users when you're cooking. It's like a really thick poly, like a plastic like thing that you put on your lap, and you can put your hot pot on your lap then and all this other crap if you don't have an accessible, really a good counter space. And I got one in the mail. It works pretty good. But using your lap, it's kind of another counter space though, even though I'm afraid of burning myself. Are you afraid of burning yourself?
Quite a few burns on my legs over the past few years that I've been cooking.
Oh my God, I bet you have.
I without thinking, I would have something hot, and now I always put if I carry something hot, I'll have like a bunch of oven mitts on my lap. But there's been a couple times where I didn't realize I had something very hot on my lap and got a couple burns.
Oh my God, I once knew a quadriplegic woman who took a pot roast out of the oven and it slipped out of the pan and landed on her lap. And she got third-degree burns. You have to be careful, right?
Yes, you do.
Do you use any special, like, attire when you're cooking to, like, protect yourself?
Just like I said, usually I just have to be mindful
that
everything I'm doing is hot.
Okay.
But if I have to, normally someone, mm-hmm. one of the guys in the kitchen will help me. But if I have to, I always try to put a bun. I have these really thick oven mitts.
Oh, yeah.
That I make sure I have on my knees, because
that's good.
I have a couple nice scars on my leg.
Oh, I know it. I have some in my hands, so I totally know what that's like. Now, do you cook at home?
Yes, I do cook at home. And my girlfriend loves it.
My boyfriend does not cook for me. He says he gets burnt out at the kitchen, and I'm like, whatever. So what do you cook for your lady?
I usually cook her like steaks, seafood, stuffed chicken, basically whatever she likes.
Yeah, I want a recipe. I want a Rob Hodge recipe.
One of my favorite recipes is on the menu at Ambrosia. Mm-hmm. I named it after my mother. It's called Shrimp Caroline.
Oh, yeah. What's in that?
And it is, first you start off with some fresh chopped garlic, some fresh chopped shallots.
Shallots.
Then you put it in a pan with some shrimp, mm-hmm. Jumbo shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
Saute that up and you put some fresh spinach.
Oh, nice.
Fresh basil.
Mm-hmm.
Heavy cream,
uh-oh.
White wine, and some diced tomatoes.
Uh-huh.
And you just toss that in with some Parm cheese and angel hair pasta.
Oh, that sounds so good.
And after it's done, you take Orza. It's like a cream cheese. It's like almost like a cream cheese with herbs and garlic in it.
Yeah, I've seen that at the store.
That on top with Parm cheese and melt it under the broil.
Oh my God, that sounds decadent. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That sounds good. All right, well, let's see here. I got a couple of questions for you. I'll let you go here. Where you're at, you know, do you have a lot of other friends in wheelchairs, or are you kind of like your own lone guy in a chair? Do you try to interact with other people in chairs?
Well, the way I work, I'm kind of the lone guy in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
I used to play wheelchair basketball.
Really?
But once I started working, that just burned out all my energy.
And plus, you're a dad. We haven't even talked about that yet. I mean, we did, but your kids are now older. I mean, what's it like now being a dad to a... How old's your kid now?
I'm a full-time dad. My son that lives with me, he just turned 10 today, actually.
Oh, wow. Well, happy birthday. Well, what's your son's name?
His name is Bryant.
Bryant. All right. And he's a football player, right?
Yeah, he plays football and baseball.
Oh, my gosh.
He's also an honor roll student. I have to add that in.
So, you know, as a father in a chair, what else, you know, you have, of course, those moments where you wish you could stand up and, you know, be that guy for your son. How did you kind of deal with it? You know, I'm going to still, you know, be okay with that and, you know, do the best I can.
Well, the main story that I always tell people that motivated me was when I came home from the hospital, he was 6 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was sitting on the edge of the bed trying to figure out how to dress myself again.
Yeah.
You know, when you have you're trying to get your pants on and can't barely bend over.
Oh.
And, you know, the different things you got to go through to learn how to dress yourself again.
Yeah.
And he was laying right next to me on the bed, and he needed his pamper changed.
Oh, no.
So that's what made me make my mind up, like, I have to do this.
Wow.
He motivated me more than anything right at that moment.
Do you ever worry, like, you know, I wish I could, like, you know, my son, you think he's getting the short end of the stick because his dad doesn't walk? I mean, I've talked to a lot of parents, and they say as long as you love your kid, that's all they care about.
And that's it. You know, like, I wish I could show him, because I played football and baseball. I was an athlete.
Yeah.
Kid.
Really?
And trying to give him pointers and things like that was one of the hardest things.
I know, yeah.
But now that he's older, he thinks I'm the coolest. Even though I'm in a wheelchair, he thinks I'm the coolest guy. He said, no matter what you are, Daddy, I love you.
Oh,
see. I went to school right before Christmas last year, and I made two different types of chocolate fondue for his class. And all the teachers loved it, and they actually want me to come back again this year.
Oh, my gosh. That's so awesome.
Like, Daddy, so he's like in school bragging, my dad is a chef. My dad is a chef.
I love that. I love it. And don't you think it's great that, you know, it sucks that your injury happened, but now you're raising this awesome child that's going to be so sensitive to people that are different in that regard, you know?
And I think that's one of the best qualities, I think, that's been passed down to him.
Mm-hmm.
With me being in chairs, like, he's such a caregiver and a caretaker. You know, when we go to Walmart, I remember he was like 4 years old, and we needed something like a tomato sauce off the top shelf, and he would be standing on my lap, and I'd be holding the waist of his pants. I'm like, you got it, buddy? And he would reach up and get it and hand it down, and he would jump down. He would sit on my lap, and I would be pushing the wheelchair and pushing the cart at the same time. And people thought it was so awesome.
Yeah, and, you know, and if people stare, who cares, right?
Yeah, we don't care.
You don't care. And I think, you know, do you think you've become, like, more confident than ever because of your disability?
Yes, it does. Yeah. I mean,
I think
even
it does.
It's a step back. It's, you know, it makes you even go harder and work harder at what you do.
Well, what are your future plans? Are you going to stay at Ambrosia, or do you want to leave and start your own place?
Right now, my future plans are to continue to help push Ambrosia forward. We have a lot of exciting things that we're doing right now. In Nectar, we have our wing challenge that I just made up, where I make like this lava nuclear wing sauce, where the challenge is they eat six of them within 10 minutes.
Uh-oh.
And they win a t-shirt and get free wings or picture on the wall.
That's so fun. I want your life, man. You're having a good time over there.
Yeah, it's definitely a good time right now. You get to see my son. You know, I work in the mornings and I come home. We do his homework. And then just like we just got home from football practice around 7:30. So we got to do our homework and then go up to football practice. And we come home and get the rest of the night done.
Oh, I love that. I love it. Yeah, you know, I think you're a really beautiful example, Rob, of just, like, moving on with your life, just sitting.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, just.
He gave me the never give up attitude. You know, quitting is not an option.
That's good. Sometimes, you know, parents, they do say that. Kids can make you stronger. It's so amazing. I'm so happy that. Well, I just think it's great that you're working as a chef, first of all. That's, to me, the coolest thing ever. Have you met any other guy who's paralyzed that's doing kind of what you're doing?
Do I know a paralyzed guy?
I don't think I do.
I don't know. I read in a magazine that I was in not too long ago where there was a chef in California.
One more.
And he was in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And they actually had our article.
Oh, they did.
And I was shocked. I said, well, cool. Somebody else in a wheelchair is actually cooking.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. I think that, you know, it's not easy to do, but you guys are breaking the glass ceiling in that industry. And, you know, there'll be little boys out there, little girls that are in wheelchairs, and maybe they'll Google it and they'll find you now, and now they'll see they can do it. So.
And that's awesome. That's what I want to do is compete. Like, actually, I just, they was talking to a guy from Penn Highlands, Pennsylvania Highlands, which is a community college.
Okay.
Here in town. And it's basically all over Pennsylvania. It's the former CCAC.
Okay.
College. And I'm going to be teaching at their culinary program that this guy, he's getting ready to rewrite the whole program.
Really?
And we're going to actually teach classes in the mornings at Ambrosia, the restaurant I'm at.
Really?
And yeah, me and the other chef there, Chef Bill Fritz.
Wow.
We're actually going to be teaching some culinary classes, so I'm going to teach them how to make soup stock, sauces,
and
seafood. So,
that's awesome. It's so cool. Good for you. I'm jealous. Gosh. Well, keep up the cooking out there in Johnstown. And thanks again for taking time out of your day. I hope people out there listening are now inspired to maybe do what you're doing if they were thinking about it. So thank you so much, all right? And have a wonderful night. And maybe I'll have you back on around Christmas. We'll talk about Christmas cooking, okay?
Awesome. I would love to.
All right. Thank you, Rob. Talk to you later.
Thank you.